Hilliard Lyons is proud to become a part of Baird, a trusted financial services firm that shares our commitment to the community. I'm Jeff Main, branch manager with Hilliard Lyons. You can learn more about Baird and our new partnership at HilliardToBaird.com.
All right, here we go. Hour number two, the Glass in the Afternoon radio program. New Sports Talk, 98.7 AM 1370 and WGCLradio.com. No matter where you're listening this afternoon, thank you for joining the program. Hour two has to be better than hour number one, doesn't it? We've set such a low bar, we should be able to hurdle it. Hopefully, though, we don't get stuck on that bar and we melt or get burned or something else. That is Keith Klein. He is always with us on Thursday afternoon. Bright and sunny in downtown Bloomington, and it is hot. Now, we're hoping that this forecast we've been following all day long stays true to form, because as we stretch out here, the hourly forecast, well, there we go. Now it's changed. That's why we do this. People say, why do you
quit looking? Yeah.
People say, why do you do the weather so many times in your 3 hours? And I said, well, because it changes.
That's right.
It's 91 now, and it feels like 91 now. And we're going to hold at 91 for a few hours.
Well, a minute ago, it felt like 97.
It does feel like 97. I was leaving that part out because I was trying to cool things off. But it is not. We are not peaking, and then we're going to be quiet. Okay. We are going to be warm. And, yes, there is a special weather statement, all kidding aside, that if you are out and about today because of the heat index value over 95, they want you to be aware of that. Take breaks, drink plenty of non-alcoholic or caffeinated fluids. Remember, kids and pets never should be left unattended in vehicles under any circumstances. Beat the heat, check the back seat. I like the sound of that. We can't be in that much of a hurry. We can't be. This special weather statement is going to run until 8 o'clock tonight, so if you want to know when it's going to cool off. When it's not going to be as hot, yeah, about then. Updated forecast, live radar. Well, you want to do the weekend, Keith, while we're here?
Oh, sure. I think you can give us more good news.
Nothing else to do, is there?
Yeah.
Big show Friday tomorrow. 87? Hey.
Okay.
86 is the average high this time of year, so that's nice. 50-50 chance of thunderstorms, especially in the morning, and then 66 and a clear sky tomorrow night. That'll be nice. 66. Saturday, sunshine, few afternoon clouds, 90. Saturday night, 69. 50-50 chance of rain on Saturday night. That's closer to midnight, Keith, so that's going to drip into Sunday. But Sunday, only 84 and 63. You think, oh, here we go. We're starting to cool off. It's going to be a cold spell. That would be the opposite of that. 87 on Monday, 93, 95, 94, 94, 95, 95, 95, 95, 95. You know what it sounds like, Mick Renheisen? Those would sound like my scores if I were playing and posting in the city golf tournament. Those are what those scores sound like. Good afternoon, Deputy Mayor. How are you?
Doing well, and if it makes you feel any better, I have heard, and I think this is statistically true, for those who record their scores in the handicap system, that 85% of golfers can't break 100. So you would see, there you go, you're already better than some percentage of golfers, because you're in the top 15% if you can break 100.
90 is my par when I play. If I could bogey every hole, I would be just fine with that, or make a couple pars.
You want to shoot your age, I've
double
heard.
Double here. I usually do.
Twice.
45, 45.
When you get to hole 10, you stop.
That's right. What do you do on the back nine? We take 2 weeks off and then quit. That's how that works. Who was your pick last week? Was it Webb Simpson? Is that another top 10 for the Renheisen machine? I believe it was.
No, I did not pick Webb last week.
No Webb?
I had him when he
won. Oh, you had Ricky Fowler.
I had Fowler, which was, he was outside the top 10. But
barely.
Top
20,
15 even.
Yeah, tied for 12th. Only made bogeys last week.
This week I'm completely confused because we're playing at Muirfield Village like twice in a row, and this is a new event, and so I wasn't really paying that much attention to the golf schedule. And so I'm looking at the leaderboard, but I'm not going to pick anybody now since I've looked at it. But you tell me more about why we have a new event back-to-back weeks, one before the annual Memorial event, which would have obviously not been this weekend had it not been for COVID.
We get by with a little help from our friends. At the time, the John Deere Classic and the Quad Cities, Mick, needed to drop dead or get building or get going, the governor of Illinois had some different parameters than Governor DeWine did in Ohio. So they told the John Deere, if you can't get us a certainty, we'll just skip you this year and we'll come back for year 50 next year. It'll be the 50th anniversary of that event. And they probably didn't want to do it without fans, so it might have worked out in the best case scenario. So what do you do with this week on the calendar? And they kicked around going to some other places, but the bubble concept appealed to the PGA Tour. So if you play at the same place 2 weeks in a row and you'll have a very similar field over those 2 weeks, you cut out some variables of moving one extra place or going through another town, city, community. And that's why Memorial will host the Muirfield Village Golf Club this week. It's going on right now. And next week. Next week, they got a big commitment, Mick. I don't know if you saw that this morning. The Large Cat will be back next week, so that's exciting.
That is exciting.
And this week, they will, at Memorial, they will slowly grow out the rough as the tournament continues through Sunday. They will slowly bring the greens up to Memorial tournament green speed, pushing all... Tiger will tell you they're the best greens on tour, and that means they're not slow if Tiger's saying that. And they have some new tee boxes this year that they can stretch the course out. So they're going to have to minimize the landing areas. The greens are easier to fix. They're bent. They can get those up and going a little bit quicker. But, yeah, they're going to try to – first time I read since Jack Nicklaus was 17 years of age that a – course went back-to-back weeks on the PGA Tour. So you're right. It does not happen very often, if at all.
Well, the rationale was very sound. Thank you for explaining that. It makes total sense now that you've explained it. You've educated me and our audience as well. I just have one reference to Tiger, and it's for Bryson DeChambeau, who won last week's event. And that's, if you're going to swing that hard with that much body mass, good luck keeping your body together when you're about 10 years old. So if that's the way he's going to win a lot of tournaments in the short term, great. But I cannot imagine that kind of torque, 190 mile per hour exit speed on a golf ball, and the torque he's putting on his body is going to allow his body to last. And Tiger's a great example of that.
Kids these days, huh?
It was impressive to watch somebody average over 350 yards of drive. I don't know how to put that in perspective.
Tiger Woods had the record, 341. At the Open Championship. And I think you might have just hit the nail on the head there. You want to drive at 350 at a middle of June tour event, great. The man did it in a major championship. So let's not get the streams crossed here, Mick. You know, we're all big fans of Tiger anyhow. So your leaderboard today, Adam Hadwin, the Canadian, who was tied for fourth last week in Detroit. He went out in the morning flight and shot 66. Youngster Colin Morikawa, he is 6-under through 12 holes, tied for the lead. Nick Taylor, who won, I believe, earlier in the year. I might be hallucinating again. He is tied for third, along with Hideki Matsuyama. Zach Johnson, Justin Thomas is one back, along with Pat Perez, Louis Oosthuizen, Patrick Reed, and Phil Mickelson's off to another hot start. I'm not doing this again, Mick. I'm going to wait for Lucy to pull that football back and watch Charlie Brown end up on his rear end. I'm not getting involved with Phil this week.
I think that's a good idea. Phil's probably going to see DeChambeau and try swinging for the fences all the time, not like he doesn't already. And I don't know that that really works well for him, because he doesn't keep it in the fairway when he does that.
One water hazard in Detroit last week, 13 of them this week. It'll be a little bit different. There are actually bogeys and double bogeys on the cards today, even a triple. When you get bored, go look at Bubba Watson's scorecard in it almost looks like it's almost 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. It's almost that interesting. Now, you have I helped you out with the golf. Now it's time for you to help out our listeners on everything that's been happening in a very, since we've talked to you last, very, very busy Bloomington and Monroe County. The big news today was the Bloomington Police Department had located the driver of the red Corolla that was involved in a hit and run deal after the protest. Was that protest on Monday, Mick? I can't, all these days are running together right now, but wrap up their involvement from Monday to the arrest that was made, I guess, today.
Absolutely. So I want to acknowledge the great work of the Bloomington Police Department and maybe make a distinction here about some of the other incidents going on. This is the only incident of the ones that have happened in the recent week, including the weekend where resident Vox Booker was attacked at Lake Monroe. And that's a horrible offense if you've seen the video. It's just completely unnerving that people would treat another human being that way, and racist epithets and the whole elements of things that happened, which led to the protest, totally understandably so. Remembering here jurisdictional issues, which I totally understand is not normally understood by members of the general public. So Lake Monroe is enforcement is the Department of Natural Resources, and hence the reason why Bloomington Police Department or the Monroe County Sheriff's Department was not involved in the investigation, could not arrest anybody, wasn't even called to do either. It's not their jurisdiction, Department of Natural Resources. In the case of the downtown protests that resulted in the arrest of Christy Bennett, who was the driver of the car that hit two people, fortunately, they're both okay, minor injuries to one a little bit more than the other, but they're both okay. That was in our jurisdiction, and BPD yesterday found her in Scottsburg, and she has now been charged and is in the Monroe County Jail, where the Monroe County prosecutor will determine what happens and what pace that happens. But she's been charged with criminal recklessness, which is a level 6 felony, 2 counts of that because there's 2 people involved, leaving the scene of an accident, resulting in serious bodily injury, that's also a level 6 felony. And the third charge was leaving the scene of an accident resulting in bodily injury, which is a class A misdemeanor. So those charges have been filed with the Monroe County prosecutor, whose jurisdiction it is to make the determination of the proceedings and what she'll ultimately be responsible for in her actions and how fast that'll go to court. So I just wanted to make that distinction because while I totally understand the emotion and the outrage and all the things that are happening in our community and in our world, it's important to note that the jurisdictions matter. And in this case, there's a distinction between what happened at Lake Monroe and what happened in Bloomington, the city of Bloomington, and therefore whose responsibility it is to investigate and charge individuals involved in such horrendous activity.
And we were fortunate enough to have Captain Steve Kellums, retired from the Bloomington Police Department, with us on Monday and Wednesday. We've been trying to help tell that story for all government entities. I understand why people are frustrated and mad as hell and aren't going to take it anymore, Mick. After seeing that video, I get that. I get that all. But we want people to put their energies in the right places where change can happen and differences can happen. And that jurisdiction is a big deal. And to make sure that everybody knows where, for example, even Brad Swain, the Monroe County Sheriff, came out and said, hey, this is a DNR issue. Right. The Monroe County prosecutor will handle it, but the Monroe County Sheriff's Department can't do anything for the DNR because it's their jurisdiction. So we've kind of had a, I don't want to call it constitutional law, but we're trying to keep everybody between the correct lines this week so they can understand how the system works. And if you haven't paid attention to how the system works until recently, that's okay. Mm-hmm. We're just trying to give you the information so you understand how it does work. And the Bloomington Police Department, how many officers, detectives, Mick, were on this case? Was this all hands on deck? I don't know how this works.
There were 6 individuals assigned to the case. And remember, it could have gone over numerous hours and numerous shifts. Fortunately, they were very efficient and effective in finding the person and, you know, peacefully arresting them. That doesn't always happen, right? There can be other things that happen. The person can resist. The person can decide they don't want to be arrested. And in this case, that did not happen. But again, I just want to acknowledge the good work of our police department, who's taking a beating on a regular basis for things that we understand are frustrating to people. I also think it's not fair to throw every law enforcement agency or individual into the same bucket. And that's going on a bit. And again, understood why that's happening. We also should acknowledge when agencies are doing the right things, not maybe everything they should be, but the right things. And we always recognize there's room for improvement. And that's what we want to hear and are hearing from our community about policing and policing practices.
And the other part of this is the cry of defund the police doesn't, you know what, I'm not going to put words in the mouths of those who say it. If you don't have police funding, how do you do an investigation over 4 days and make sure these people do come to justice? So I understand it's maybe more of a rallying cry than literally take money out of it, but you can't have it both ways, can you?
Well, it's a very broad term, and probably for the reason you just mentioned. Understanding what really is at the heart of that catchphrase that's being used is really important. And I think we're going to have to listen to our community residents and find out, well, what is it that you mean? What are you asking our agency or others to do? And then therefore, if you ask for that and you get it, is this really what you want? So those are questions that we're about to go through a budget process in August. I'm quite confident we'll have plenty of people attend those budget discussions and bring these questions up and we'll answer them. But it's really important to try to understand what's at the root of your concern. And is it just directed, again, understandably so, at the conditions that we have seen in other communities around our country, around the world?
Which is understandable.
It is. It absolutely is. And we're not denying it or avoiding it. We just want to know what's wrong here that you'd like us to fix and at what cost. And I mean, okay, less here, but here are the repercussions. Response time, and our fire department talks about this a lot. If you call 911 to have fire dispatched to your house, you want them there as fast as you can so you don't lose life and property. That's the same for police. If you want them to come as fast as possible when you need them, you know, if you have less of them or less resources for them to get there, then there's going to be a longer lag time. And are you okay with that? If that's what you mean by defunding police. So all questions that, you know, we'll listen and respond to when we get those questions from our community and from our city council.
We're speaking with Mick Renneisen, the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. And Mick, one of the things that impressed me maybe most about the police work on this is, if you recall, on Monday, they had a license plate number and they had a registration because of that. And they went to a house where that address led them for the registration, and there's nobody there by then. So the fact that 70 miles away in Scottsburg, they trace this car to that area with a faulty registration address and all these other things, I'm kind of impressed by the work of what it took to trace all of that down.
Well, thank you for acknowledging that. I think a lot of us are guilty of watching Law and Order on TV and any other, crime TV show and thinking that these things happen in the course of an hour. You know, don't you just have facial recognition technology and you can find somebody anywhere, anytime you like? And of course, those are TV shows. The reality of police work is a lot different, and there's a lot that goes into it. And I appreciate that you acknowledge that in fairly short order, this person was arrested, identified, and is now in jail awaiting their trial.
Mick, just a correction. I understand she bonded out and is now awaiting a July 17th court hearing.
Okay. Thank you for that. I was not aware of that.
By the way, one other quick thing you mentioned about the kind of police work. Mayor Hamilton made a statement last night. He said, "We want to thank our police officers for their tireless work over the last 3 days to identify and apprehend the driver." And, you know, that's a nice short statement, but yes, amen.
Well, again, you know, there's appropriate criticism of law enforcement around the country, but I also think there's appropriate acknowledgement of the good work that many of these officers do and are now just getting tossed into the same basket of people who have taken their badge and dishonored it by doing actions that no good police officer, a law enforcement officer would, and we've got a lot of those, and I think that needs to be acknowledged too. Again, having said that, we totally understand where the angst is coming from, and we are responsive and will be responsive to trying to listen to the community and what they think we can do better.
Shifting subjects, you told us that we were going to see some pylons being put on that 4th Street garage area. There's a lot of work going on over there right now.
There is, and that is the first of the garage steps that, if anyone wants to see what happens about 2 months in advance, 2 months from now, what it'll look like, go over to the Trades District garage, because we are now on deck number two, floor number two. After the piers are poured, they start the decking. They started at the ground floor, obviously, and worked their way up. And so 4th Street's now underway with the pier pouring, and they're drilling the pier holes at this point in time. And then you'll start to see those piers come out of the ground and then decks being poured shortly after that.
One of the other topics that we want to talk to you about is we're told that some of the farmers in the farmers market at City Hall have left to go to And Mike doesn't like it when I say West Side. So I'll say that other part of town, a brand new farmer's market. What's the status and what effect will that have on the Bloomington farmer's market?
Yeah, that's a fair question. And I do have some data for our audience. The existing city farmer's market has 40 vendors who will vend this weekend. And for comparison, the People's Market, which is the one on the east side over by Blooming Foods on the east side, has about 15. And the new market that the winter market organizers are running on, as you called it, Keith, the west side over at the Woolery Mill this Saturday, we believe they have about 28 signed up. Some of the vendors are vending in multiple places. They have enough staff to be able to do that. So the city market still has a large contingent of vendors. The city staff asked in a survey how many were going to continue to vend with the city market. And right now that number looks to be pretty stable at 40 for the near future. Last weekend, there were 1,200 customers at the city market. I can't report the data for the other two markets. They're not ours, and I don't know how they count their attendees. To give you some comparison, last year at this time at the city market, we had between 300 and 700 customers a day. So while that's not the thousands that we had 2 years ago, 1,200 people using the market as a place to get their food or other products that are sold at the market is still a fairly large community event. And I think, you know, that hopefully we'll see if there need to be any changes in the future. But that's the current information we have. And certainly there are less vendors and less customers, but there's still a good contingent of people using the city market.
2020 is going to have an asterisk on everything anyhow. The data we have is not going to be comparable unless you have the 1918 Spanish influenza data from back then. It's not going to be the case. There's enough for everybody. There's enough room for everybody. And moving forward, I don't know what the answer is to any of these questions, Mick, because the playing field of what COVID has brought to it, it's just too hard to – you're just moving the goalposts every week, it would seem like. So we just get through this together the best we can, and then, I don't know, when can we get back? Well, that's a million-dollar question. When can it get back to the normal spot? We just have to evolve and get better, I would think.
Well, I think we as a society are learning what we do have control over to some extent, and that's if we wear masks, we know we can slow the spread. And so you're seeing, you know, various entities are enacting their own requirements to wear a mask when you come into a business. I went to a bakery to grab some scones the other day, and they said, as of tomorrow, we're going to require customers to wear masks. And I was wearing one when I went in, and I told them, that's great. I applaud you for that. I think that's wonderful that you've chosen on your own to implement your own mask wearing policy. It's very possible the county may consider or may in fact announce that in the very short future. I think we're all concerned as a community about 40,000 people or some number of students coming back from all over, and not just the students. We have plenty of local residents that still aren't wearing masks, but we've watched the rest of the country open without those mask wearing requirements, and look what's happened, the surge. So we can control some of this if we just take precautions for each other. And I just want to remind people, when you wear a mask, you're protecting somebody else from you and vice versa. So that's a very simple thing. That and hygiene, which we've talked about from day one. Wash your hands, sanitize your hands, stay distant from people. Look, we can do this together and make a difference. Or, hey, we can throw our hands up and just decide we're going to try to act like normal. And then we'll be in this crisis for a long time and we're going to lose people.
And when we get together, I mean, obviously Penny Caudill wouldn't have mentioned this in the commissioner's meeting if she didn't think something was happening tomorrow. What does requiring a mask mean from the Monroe County Health Department to clear up any confusion on what it means?
Well, I won't try to explain what they haven't formally come out with yet. But, you know, I think it's going to probably mean if you can't keep physical distancing of 6 foot or more when you are in a venue inside or outside, then you must wear a mask. I think that's what it probably will boil down to. That's pretty much what we're seeing in other communities. We know four counties in Indiana have already enacted these. mask requirement, mask wearing requirements. So I'm sure that the county is studying what other counties are doing and trying to make the best situation for Bloomington and Monroe County residents. So I don't know exactly what it will say. That would be my guess.
And again, another hypothetical along those lines, if is a requirement different from a recommendation, different from a suggestion, or is the Bloomington Police Department going to be called to businesses and say, hey, there's somebody in here who refuses to wear a mask? How does this work if we get down that road? Is that something that...
Those discussions are going on. All the law enforcement entities that would be impacted are being asked how or if they can even do any enforcement. I would like to use this comparison. There was a city requirement that you could not smoke in bars and restaurants in the early 2000s, so almost 20 years ago. Dr. Tony Pizzo had advocated for that as a city councilor for a long time. And he finally got that passed with his peers in the early 2000s. And everybody thought the world was going to end. I can't believe you're not going to let me smoke in wherever you happen to frequent, to eat out or go to a bar. And the enforcement was a big concern then. And so there was never any really overtly heavy-handed need to enforce. Mostly peer pressure worked. And complaint-driven processes helped to mitigate most of that. So I can't answer how the enforcement will exactly work, but if people think we're going to send Bloomington police officers out because you see somebody walking down the street without a mask on, and we're going to chase them down with a badged officer, or the sheriff's going to do that, that's not a good way of utilizing those resources. And I think it's going to feel really heavy-handed. So I would say that we might look at the example of the no smoking ordinance that was passed and see what we did then and see if some of those practices can't be used for the mask wearing component requirement, if in fact that's what's going to happen. And I think we'll know about that in the next couple of days.
Excellent analogy, Mick. Mick Renhuizen's the deputy mayor of the city of Bloomington. He joins the program this afternoon. Before we get to trivia, the Big Ten is officially announced. We are facing uncertain and unprecedented times in the health, safety, and wellness of our student athletes, coaches, game officials, and other associated with our sports program and campuses remain our number one priority. To that end, the Big Ten Conference announces today that if the conference is able to participate in fall sports, there's an if in there, Keith, it will move to conference-only schedules in these sports, and that means all the fall sports. Details for these sports will be released at a later date. While decisions on sports not listed, which obviously would be winter and spring sports, there you go. Why are we doing this? By limiting competition to other Big Ten institutions, the conference will have the greatest flexibility to adjust its own operations throughout the season and make quick decisions in real time based on the most current evolving medical advice and the fluid nature of the pandemic. The short, long and short of it is conference-only football this fall in the Big Ten, and conference-only everything for every sport in the fall calendar of the Big Ten, Mick. That's been news we've been following all afternoon. That is the official statement. There's more to it. We'll get into more of this with Zach Osterman in about 35 minutes. So, again, flexibility, flexibility, flexibility.
Well, these are unprecedented times, and, you know, that doesn't surprise me when the Ivy League decided to cancel their football season yesterday. I don't know if everybody remembers back in March, on March 10th, they were the first league to cancel their basketball tournament. The very next day, the Big Ten did and everybody else did. And the day after that, the NCAA tournament was canceled. Those people in the Ivy League are pretty smart. I guess they figured it out, at least figured it out first. That
they know somebody. They know a guy.
At the same time, you know, I think leaving it open-ended a little bit as we continue to try to figure out how to stop the spread and manage to get back to normalcy is good. I'm glad the Big Ten offered some ifs in there and some provisions for things depending on how the months ahead progress.
And if is an interesting word for a lot of connotations. We'll pick up on that next time. Now, we know our Zoom meetings end here shortly, so we'll get to the Celeste beating portion of the program. Go ahead, Celeste. Take it out on us. We're here for you. It's summertime trivia. This is be heat trivia, right? We're talking about the hottest temperatures ever.
Well, you could offer categories, and I can tell her that, and then
oh no,
yeah, right.
You at least have some input about where you're going to take your beatings in the future weeks. But this week it's Bloomington history.
Oh, okay.
Thank goodness so Keith is
Keith,
here.
You've been around since Bloomington's 202 years old, so you've got some history here. How many of those 202 years have you lived in Bloomington?
Years. You've been here
lots
since
of them. 50s? I was a student in 1964. Came back in 67 and 77, and been here ever since.
So almost all of them.
I should be quiet. I don't have that many different years than you do. Then I came in 75 and never left. So, well, anyway, history that I think the audience will be well versed in today. That meaning you two.
Okay.
So in 1904, Bloomington High School won its first state title for what sport?
Wrestling.
Yes, wrestling.
Not even one of the options.
Nope.
Basketball, volleyball, track and field, or football?
It's track and field. I'm going with track and field.
Then I'll go with football.
And it's track and field. Glass is correct. 1904, first title. Now, they did win wrestling, and they did win a basketball title.
Yeah, they've been in a lot of those. Like when the IHSA does their Twitter feed popping up, 100 years ago or 75, there's plenty of Bloomington activity in there.
Mm-hmm. All right, 1-0. That would be Glass in the lead. The first board of directors for the Bloomington Hospital all have something in common. What is it? And by the way, this was 1906, the first Bloomington Board of Hospital Directors.
They were all women.
And that's one of the options. All women, all physicians, all IU professors, or all over the age of 55.
I'm going to go with Keith. If you're going to get it out of there.
The Bloomington Women's Hospital is the way they referred to it.
There, look at him go.
He is correct, and he's confident in his answer, and he's correct in his answer. That is the right answer.
He was giving you the essay version, not the multiple choice.
Yep, there you go. Still Glass with a 2-1 lead. And the last question of the day, 1907, First National Bank was built at the location of 121 to 125 West Kirkwood. What business is located at this address today?
Oh, that's the one with the thermometer and the clock that goes around on top.
121 to 125 West Kirkwood. Is it the Briar and the Burley, Buskirk Chumley Theater, the Graduate Hotel, or Fountain Square Mall?
Well, it's going to be the Briar and Burley then.
Yeah, because that's that block. Well, yeah. Fountain Square Mall is on that block. Briar and the Burley is on the corner of College, and I'll go with Fountain Square Mall.
Okay.
And Keith, you went with the Briar and the Burley?
Right.
Fountain Square Mall is correct because it was encompassing 121 to 125.
Aha.
Yeah, but don't forget when Bill Cook went in there to fix it, they found out that wasn't connected at any time. One of them could have fallen into College and the other part could have fallen into Walnut Street.
You're trying to win on a technicality
argument. Well,
professor or something.
It was the address was the Celeste trick part there because it didn't cover the entire block. So that's how we got there.
So you all did pretty well this week.
Not bad. Not bad at all. You got a big city golf tournament coming up tomorrow, or Saturday, rather. We'll have Chris Williams on the program tomorrow at 3:25 to break down what's going on. So we hope we get a great turnout and some great competition. Everybody better drink your water starting today. Don't wait till you get out there, right, Mick?
No, that's a great point. That's for all of us that go out in the heat and humidity. Make sure you're hydrated before you think you're thirsty.
And
just keep drinking water.
And then add some barley and hops to your water. Don't start with barley and hops. After. Great job as always, my friend. Thanks for the insight, and we'll do it again next week.
Take care,
guys.